Proudly presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, it's the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Thank you so much for all the listeners, the thousands of listeners. We appreciate the growth of the podcast. Those of you who tune in on Podbean, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you are, and on JoeBucksFan.com, the podcast posts first every Tuesday and Thursday. We appreciate it. Want to save money on a Cadillac? Make sure it's backed by Morse. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, right now, not only can you lease a 2018 ATS Coupe for just $349 a month, zero down, if you find a lower price on a new Cadillac, they will match it or refund you $500. That's the Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa Price Protection Promise. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit edmorsecadillactampa.com. You can get all the details there, and you can also visit edmorse.com/promise. for complete details on the price protection promise. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, just west of Causeway Boulevard, right there, it's clearance time. Save up to $13,000 on remaining 2017 Cadillacs, and for a limited time only, get 0% for 72 months on the powerful Cadillac Escalade. Plus, you get free car washes for life. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard, visit edmorsecadillacbrandon.com for all the details. Great pre-owned selection, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. We appreciate their support, and here's Ira. Happy Thursday. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Steve Isbitt's here, JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper is in the house. We are at one of these posh resorts here in Orlando, Ira. Jimi Hendrix is in the background.
It's all about high quality. Red House Jimi Hendrix.
There you go, Ira. Of course, we're recording this. We're still at the NFL owners' meetings, soaking up even more. We talked to Jason Light since our last podcast. So let's get right to the meat on the bone, Ira, except for, you know, we usually get into some silliness, but we'll get right after it today. Vernon Hargreaves, Dirk Cutter talked about him, and what did he say? He said that this guy, any team in the NFL would want him as their top nickel. He's that good at nickel. Now, Cutter continued.
Hold on. I think at this point it's fair and it's important to mention that Dirk Cutter only had a cup of coffee in front of him and not a six-pack. When he said that Hargreaves is as good a nickel as there is in the National Football. Excuse me. Do we have enough sample size of Vernon Hargreaves at nickel to make a statement like that, Lee?
Well, I'll tell you what they got enough sample size of. Got enough sample size from Vernon Hargreaves, from Javion Elliott, from Ryan Smith, that this current defensive coaching staff cannot develop a rookie. And I know people get twisted up when I say that. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. That's all I ask.
Look, none of us are rooting for Vernon Hargreaves to fail, but they drafted him as an outside cornerback. Nobody's going to argue that point. They didn't draft him as a nickel.
And where was he drafted, Ira, by the way?
I believe number 11, something like that.
Only a mental patient drafts a guy 11th overall for a nickel corner.
Right, right. So we've established that. And right now, they're looking for a guy to complement Brent Grimes, and they don't have him. They don't have him on the outside, and that's why I don't think there's any question, Steve, although they don't have a third-round pick, they got to find a way to get a cornerback in the building that they can rely on, and they don't have a lot of draft picks to do so.
Well, I'm going to go on a limb, Ira, and say that after studying all the body language and talking to who I talked to today, yesterday, feeling it all out, I don't believe this team really has any expectation of Vernon Hargreaves returning to the outside corner position as their first option. You know, it doesn't mean he can't play there, but I don't think they plan to have him start. So we're at April 1st almost, Ira. Does that mean that you're going to see, I'll take your sage wisdom, are we going to see that Bucks draft a cornerback in the first round or the second round?
Well, I'm going to say this. The guy that's going to start opposite Brent Grimes on the outside is not on the current Bucks roster. Is not.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't mean they won't pick up a veteran that's in a final cut by somebody.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that. And still draft somebody. But I'll say it before Lee does. When you're relying on a rookie to make a big impact in the, a second-round cornerback, say, that's a gamble. That's
major.
That's a gamble.
Major.
And they don't have a great track record, Lee, with young cornerbacks. You're right.
When you say they, I'm going to be specific. Mike Smith, John Hoke, can't remember the third defensive back coach. There's no evidence they can develop one. None. 0-3 in 2 years.
I would not be surprised if they take the kid from Ohio State, the corner, at number 7. I wouldn't be shocked.
Denzel Ward.
I would not be shocked, Steve. I would not be shocked.
You guys might have to be pulling me out of a drunk tank if that ever happens.
And I don't think they can move back to 12 and necessarily think they're going to get that guy at 12.
Yeah, we might have to restrain Lee if that happens.
Because that's just throwing away a draft pick in my eyes.
You don't buy the player or you don't like the position?
I don't buy the coaching. So far, they're 0 for 3 in developing rookie corners. So I have zero confidence. I mean zero confidence. They can go 1 for 3.
Steve, if this kid is as good as Marshawn Lattimore, I would seriously think about taking him if you've made that determination. Lattimore had a big impact on the Saints. I mean, a big one.
And I'm not being facetious here. Of course, the Bucs don't agree with Lee. They don't think they're horrible coaches who are, you know, going to go 0 for 4 developing a cornerback. But the way it's shaping up, the way Dirk Koetter is talking, you know, it's a no-brainer that they draft a cornerback. Think of how important that position is in this division. And you know what? I could see them. They're all hot in the pants about how they developed the defensive line in the offseason. They've landed all these extra bodies. And now what's the missing piece? Russian coverage. You've written about 100 times. So if they feel, hey, we'll go get that blue chip corner and fix it all up here and tighten it up, I could see them doing that, Ira, which, wow.
Could it be a safety in that regard? Could it?
I don't think so.
I think cornerback's more of a yawning need than a safety. I do.
They clearly, yes, I agree with that. And just so people don't take me the wrong way, I hope they prove me wrong. I just have zero confidence.
And, Steve, if Hargraves right now had lived up to his billing, his draft billing, we're not having this conversation.
No.
We're not having this conversation. Maybe they're looking for a nickel back, but it's not desperate time. Right now, they got to get another corner.
No, and, you know, what's interesting is that it's a little confusing to me. Not that he was so great, but Robert McClain was on this team last year, veteran, knows Mike Smith's system.
He did have three picks, I believe.
Had three picks, team guy, versatile. You know, where is he? I don't know.
Maybe McClain would be a little bit better with a better pass rush.
That's true. And
throw that in there.
And this just backs up what I've been saying. McClain, veteran guy, you could argue he exceeded expectations. No one expected Brent Grimes to be as good as what he has been, veteran guy. But the rookies, forget about it. So that just reinforces my point that veterans go well with Mike Smith and Hoke. And, again, I can't think of the other secondary coach.
Brent Maxey.
Yes, Brent Maxey.
Steve,
they work well with veterans, but the rookies, no.
Steve, I think we can speak for Buck Nation. It's a little presumptuous, but I think we can. That at this point, at this very, very point, corner and running back are the obvious gaps,
yeah.
The obvious priorities. You want to throw safety in? Okay. But corner and running back, you can't get around it, Steve.
Well, I don't even think you can necessarily go there with safety. At least you have guys who you know who can play. At cornerback, I mean, even if you look at it this way, Brent Grimes, his own wife said he was hurt 80%. He only played at 80% all of last season. He's 35 years old. I mean, at some point, it catches up. They got nobody behind him. Ryan Smith, you know.
Hey, the word on the street is you need three or four cornerbacks in the NFL.
Right. What street?
Easy street, baby.
Okay.
And maybe four in the NFC South.
You know what I'm saying?
But I don't have a problem with him drafting a corner because they're in such desperate need. It's just dicey given the coaching staff, what happened with Hargraves, and, the fact that they'll be relying on this guy so heavily.
You get any sense that Hargraves is going to get another shot at outside corner, Lee, or they got him ticketed as a nickel?
I would say yes, they're going to give him another shot because, again, you don't draft a guy 11th overall to be a nickel corner. That's crazy. That's crazy. So, you know, I'm sure Light is pushing those guys to, you know, hey, man, you know, I didn't draft him for this. And they got too much invested in him. But, I hope they prove me wrong as wrong can be, but I have – I just think they're burning the draft pick if they draft one.
Steve, do you
I
get
really
a sense?
Do
you get any sense that a guy like Light, who loves the draft, loves everything about it, and is pretty darn good at it? Let's be honest, he's pretty darn good at it. Class of 2016, notwithstanding, right?
Well,
but he's going to hit home runs every year. But he started off with a bang, in 2014. First guy ever drafted, I believe, was Mike Evans. I mean, you can't complain about
sure.
Mike Evans. So anyway,
and by the way, he's last man standing.
I understand. Any sense? From Light's perspective, that that he's got a hole burning in his gut because now he doesn't have a third-round pick, even though he put it to good use with Pierre Paul. But is that bothering him? Is that killing him?
Well, Ira, let's give the people a little perspective here. We're patrolling the halls of the Ritz-Carlton today, and Light's getting ready to step in the studio there, makeshift outdoor studio with Mike Florio. You got the guy by the sport coat saying, "Hey, is it burning a hole in your pocket, in your groin here that you don't have a third-round pick?" So you will know the answer. Do I believe that Light's freaking out? No.
He said no because no. We put it to good use. That's what he's saying. And they did.
You know, they'll take JPP all day long. But let's face it. The Bucks own, as a result of that swap with the Giants, they swapped fourth-round picks as part of that deal. So the Bucks have the second pick on the third day of the draft. And it's going to be a piece of cake for Light to move back into the third round. Maybe, you know, throw out a seventh-round pick if there's somebody he wants to go after. So, and he's traded up in so many drafts, including to get
Aguayo.
Kendall Beckwith.
But it was going to be a high third-round pick.
Aguayo.
It was going to be a high third if the Bucks kept it.
Yeah. Right. Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
So
yeah.
He'll get back there, I think, if he needs to. I don't think he's sweating it.
Okay.
So, Sage, here we are. This time next week, you know, we're about 10 minutes into the podcast. This time next week, we're going to be talking about fanretreat.com and some of the wild things coming Bucks fans' way. And we're probably about 3 weeks away, once the schedule comes out, of announcing the fan retreat, the road trip with the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports.
And we had a little meet and greet today, Stephen.
You had a little meet and greet. You got to hang out with Sean Lemon, CEO of Fan Retreat. So we're very excited about that partnership that's going to really come into full bloom this year, because the lost fan retreat last year to Miami was such a shame, but that's old news. We're going big, Ira, this time. Your podcast available, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. Subscribe to the damn podcast, please. The Sage likes that. Leave a review. Tell him he's great. Tell him he's not. Whatever you want to do, give it a 5-star review. It raises the profile. We like it. Helps us out. And just do it, right? Why not? People love to do you a favor. They can leave you a review, Ira.
They can even write a review in my voice. they know my cadence, so do a Kaufman review on yours truly.
You wouldn't believe the feedback that we get of people saying they read your column with your voice in their head.
You know what? I take that as a hell of a compliment, because that's a personal style.
Yeah.
And I think that's a plus. You develop a personal style. Don't forget, all those years I was working for the wire service, they don't want you to do that. They want meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
You know, who, what, where,
style.
And whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, so I did that for a long, long time. Now I got my freedom, gentlemen.
Yeah, and we like gravy and butter and all the fixins', right? So this podcast is all of Ira's fixins'. One thing that is certain, you asked Dirk Koetter about the running back situation. And in the last podcast, we talked about how the Bucks passed on a running back. I believe we talked about that. They didn't get their guy in free agency.
Don't say passed. They couldn't get it done.
Get their guy in. They backed out. It was the really what Koetter explained. They backed out financially as the stakes got really high. And they did for Deion Lewis, Carlos Hyde, compared to past years. Now, I don't know. They still have money around. Would you rather have Carlos Hyde or Will Golston? That's an easy answer for me. Easy answer
but
for me.
Maybe they don't make the Pierre Paul deal if the money's different in terms of what they've spent.
Like Steve said, you got Will Golston's salary one hand, Mr. No Sack, and then you have Deion Lewis in the other hand. Well, that's a no-brainer. Take me 5 seconds to make a decision.
By the way, guys, have you thought about this? Will Golston's job's in jeopardy, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah, I thought that this morning as
because, well. Because, as I've mentioned several times, Pierre Paul plays a lot on the left side, or has, and been very effective doing it. And if Vinny Curry's going to get some snaps and you got Noah Spence involved on the right side, there's no guarantee Golston's not going to be a backup.
That crossed my mind, and it's not because I've been hammering on him and his lack of production, but that did cross my mind this morning. When I heard Dirk Koetter talking about the defensive line, like, you know what? Golston's a bubble player now. I believe that.
Yeah.
I really believe it because of his salary. It's an albatross. If he was making half as much, yeah, I think his job would be a little more secure. Now, here's something one of our readers on JoeBucksFan.com brought up, one of our commenters, and I thought it was very interesting. Golston, I'm being fair here, Golston's got a little knack for blocking kicks.
Yes.
When's the last time he batted down a pass? Now, think about that.
At that height?
Yeah. With his height, in his ability to sky, which he's demonstrated on field goals and extra points, but he can't bat down a pass. And you and I both know batting down a pass is a hell of a lot easier than blocking a field goal.
and one or two batten down passes a game can get you a win. It can get you a win.
It is what Dirk Cutter refers to as a drive killer.
Yeah, a couple things just to update on Spotrac.com, which is very reliable with the salaries. Will Gulston's contract's guaranteed for this year, Ira. The Buccaneers missed their window, if you want to call it that, to cut him.
So he's not going anywhere.
So he ain't going anywhere. $6.5 million. I'm glad he's not. He's still young.
Good death.
If Brenton Buckner is the guy that he's supposed to be, guy known for resurrecting, a guy known for having a great track record with large defensive linemen. He's had, if you look at his history, Campbell, and there have been others. You know, he's 26 years old, 27 years old. Let Buckner at him. He's great depth. But you know what? I bet you the Buccaneers are going to have more teams throwing on them on first and second down this year with a better third down pass rush. Yeah, maybe Gulston can finally knock some balls down because that's when he's probably going to play is first and second down.
Mm-hmm. And I think Bo Allen's going to play first and second down, Lee. I see Bo Allen. Mm-hmm. He'll get his snaps. Third down, probably not. But I like the idea of the Bucs taking a page out of the Eagles' book. Now, look. That doesn't mean I think the Bucs are going to, you know, end up going to Super Bowl and then going to be at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, you know, February 5th. But what I am saying is, you know, they've come a long way in terms of building up some depth up front on that defensive line. Rotation's important. Depth's important. Injuries are going to occur. Steve, it's not if you're going to get injuries. It's when you're going to get injuries. Everybody knows that. These guys, they can't sustain it. Now,
this year they should be.
That's what made it so amazing to me. I believe the first 8 or 9 weeks of last season, the Bucs fielded the same five guys across the offensive line. That's almost unheard of. They had a lot of continuity up there until the bottom fell out. And at that point, they still had a bad record. And they still didn't have a lot of offensive production, and they couldn't run the ball. And as you've mentioned many times, they ran the ball better after the injuries, which that's a little concerning, Steve, right then and there, right there. But it might be a reason why they're looking at Benenach as starting material.
We'll talk about Benenach a little bit, Ira, but I want to put you on the spot, right? Because this podcast is known for having some edge and making you man up here and do your sage thing. Now, you've spent time around the Glazers. You've spent time around NFL officials. You've been hanging out with Light all over this guy. He can't wait to get rid of you. And you know, you sat in with Dirk Cutter this morning. With all the vibes you're getting from all of these players, what is the win total sitting on Dirk Cutter's head this season and on Jason Light's?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, what do they have to do to keep their jobs next year? Both of them, Light and Cutter, with everything you've absorbed here at the NFL owners' meetings.
Well, of course, you got the Winston investigation hanging in the balance. And if it's 6 games, you know, that screws everything up. There's no question about it. I would say the number might be 9. I don't like 8-8. I don't like it. I don't think Buck fans are going to accept it. I don't think it's good enough with everything they've done and winning 9 games 2 years ago. And now it's a better team now than they were 2 years ago. And Jameis has more experience. I think it's fair to expect at least a 9-win season. I said 10 last year. I'm going to throw out 10 again. But a lot of players are going to have to step up. A lot of players are going to, and starting with Jameis Winston.
So you think it may be a house cleaning if they don't get 9 wins?
I think 9 wins, you know, they keep telling us nobody expects more than the people at One Buck Place. Mm-hmm. So what does that tell you? Cutter's already proven he can win 9 games.
Yeah.
You know, don't go back to 8 or 7. Look, Steve, I don't think you realize the agita of Buccaneer fans.
There we go again.
This is 10 years. This is a lost decade, Lee.
Yeah,
it's a lost decade. When you're mentioned in the same breath as the Cleveland Browns, and you're now number 2 on the list of playoff drought seasons, that is significant. When you've been in the basement 6 times in the last 7 years, am I correct on that one? I believe I am. 6 out of 7. Now, granted, it's a tough division. I understand that. But they're doormats. That's their reputation, their division.
Yeah, I did some research today. I know we talked about this in our earlier
podcast. Why not aim high, Lee? Why not?
I did some research this afternoon because I wrote the story. I know we touched upon this in a previous podcast about how Riverboat Ron Rivera said, same old Bucks. They're better in the second half than they are in the first. And how they, you know, it's not just slow starts to games, but slow starts to a season. Only twice since Chucky was jettisoned have the Bucks not finished in last place. Both those were winning seasons.
One more thing. And Rich McKay said this on the conference call last week, and he's proud of it. He says that every year. And he said it again. He said, every season, and it's something like the last 11 seasons, every season, at least one team that finished in its division basement the following season wins the division. That's why the NFL is a great sport. Mm-hmm. You don't see that in the NBA.
Except the Bucks and the Browns. Yeah.
And why can't it happen to Tampa? I understand that this division's tough, but why can't it happen? Nobody thought the Eagles were going to take that kind of jump. Lee? Nobody. Yeah. Nobody.
I want to clarify for the good folks, so there's no confusion, Mr. Sage.
8-8, you can take that and put it where the sun don't shine, Isbits. 8-8, I'm not interested in it.
Winning
I'm not
record,
interested.
Yeah.
All right, Ira. So, but my question is, 9-7, we all heard you loud and clear. We all know where the sun...
Minimum.
I know.
Yeah.
We all know where the sun don't shine. Is that for both Light and Cutter? 9-7 for both. So, and I ask you that is, do you see a scenario where 9-7 is good enough for Light, not for Cutter, or 9-7 is good enough for Cutter, but not for Mr. Light?
I see them as a tandem. I see them tethered together. I don't know that for a fact that the Glazers see it that way. But what are you going to do? Bring in a new general manager and keep Cutter as coach? That usually doesn't work. It's usually not the way, and vice versa. I see them together at the hip. They're either going to succeed together or this is going to be their last season.
Do they give Light the opportunity to hire a second coach? He didn't hire Lovey.
Here we are in March, gentlemen. You already got Jason Light's death warrant here, gentlemen.
Don't make a mistake. I'm asking you. Look, you just soaked in all this knowledge. I'm asking you for a barometer. So
their jobs are on the line. To my mind, they got to win 9 or 10 games.
That's fair.
To keep it. And
now,
if
you
not,
said nine.
They're both gone.
You said nine, Aaron. Nine.
And I feel they're both gone. It's
tough stuff. Lee, you want to check in on that? You want to think that over a little bit?
I'm going to think it over. There's too many moving parts to it. One of which is, and I just said it, Light's only hired one coach. He didn't hire Lovey. And generally in the NFL, Ira knows as well as anyone, they usually get two coaches. And it seems like, just from things I hear, that the Glazers like Light. Certainly, they like his draft acumen. Is that enough to get him over the hump? I don't know. Hey, if they go 6-10, but all these new guys that Light added play well, when I say 6-10, I'm factoring in Jameis, Uber, Lissi.
And another good draft.
Yeah.
That's a factor. It's a mitigating factor. Definitely has a good draft track record. He does.
I'm with you there, Ira. I think the Bucks have to. The only shot these guys have is to at least go 500. So I'm going to go 8-8. I don't think anybody's going to stand for 7-9. Like you said, Dirk set the bar for himself at 9-7 with less talent than he has now. So that's end of story right there. They had less talent in 2016. Go man for man, it's less.
And Cutter's even said that publicly.
Right.
They had more talent last year.
Exactly. And now this year is even better.
Maybe a Winston injury, God forbid, would factor in.
Sure. You know. Or like we said, a suspension.
All right, Ira, so we got you on the hook.
By the way, you've asked everybody, including the butler over here, and the guy that's parking the cars out front, what's going on with the Winston suspension. At least Cutter and Light have now acknowledged that they're frustrated. It's a start, Lee. It's a start.
I don't blame them. I would be too.
Well, do you see that as an indication that they're going to take some charge? So we were getting, you know, Dirk Cutter said that this morning, but then this afternoon we got in front of Jason Light, and he said he's frustrated. Lee wrote it up. So really,
how can he not be, Steve? How can he
not
be?
Well, previously he said no big deal. We're out of our hands.
They try to downplay. Mm-hmm.
Right, but now they're openly saying they're frustrated. So you know that, I believe anyway, you tell me if I'm wrong, I believe they're taking their cues from ownership, right? That's on this magnitude of an issue. So we're going to talk.
And ownership is also frustrated, obviously.
Well, we're going to find that out. We're talking to the Glazers before this podcast kicks off. But so what do you make of that then? Is there frustration in that they feel?
It's the not knowing.
Or is it that they're not doing anything? Is the frustration meaning, hey, that nothing's going on, so we're annoyed that they're not pushing?
Well, there's no end in sight. Lee, there's no directive. There's no
end in sight because there's no beginning in sight. I think we talked about this in our previous podcast, but I just thought what Florio said when you made an appearance on the great Mike Florio show, Pro Football Talk Live, NBC Sports Network, which all intelligent football fans enjoy. When he said it was more of a PR issue than a legal issue. And as soon as they get their ducks in a row PR-wise, then they'll start making some movement. I just thought it was
That's no way to run a
league. Well, maybe not, but guess what? They're raking in money hand over fist.
They are making money.
I think the fear, here's my fear, Steve, based on past decisions, I think Goodell might suspend Winston 2 games, 4 games, without coming to the conclusion that it was overwhelming evidence. That is the killer.
That happened to Ezekiel Elliott. There's precedents already set.
And then, you know, your appeals are going to fall short. They don't work. The appeals don't work. Just ask Jerry. You know, Jerry Jones.
Oh, yeah.
They don't work. The edict comes down and you live with it. That's a tough way to run your business.
It just feels to me, Ira, that the NFL is waiting for somebody, one of the players here, Winston, the woman accusing him, whatever, her attorney, whoever. They're waiting for somebody to make a move, right? But if she doesn't make a move and doesn't talk to the league, then they're sort of on a time limit of, well, we got to do something. But I don't think they feel any pressure yet. They're waiting for someone to blink, and nobody's blinking.
Yeah, they want this thing resolved. Go resolve it. And right now, both sides seem to be dug in a little bit. We don't know all the details that are going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, we have no idea.
But the fact is that here we are in March, and we're a couple weeks away from the start of OTAs, and we don't know if Jameis Winston's going to be able to be there for game one. That's frustrating.
It is. It's really not fair, but Goodell isn't about fair.
All right, Ira, you mentioned Caleb Benenach, and Dirk Koetter, you know, sort of implied that, hey, Benenach's in play to start at right guard. For those who don't even know who he is, fifth round pick 2 years ago, and
didn't play much till late last season.
Yeah, played a tiny bit in 2016. Late last season, we saw him at right tackle, primarily in for Jahmyr Dotson. They like him as a run blocker. This came out last year. They like the way that's his game, pass blocking. And we saw that in Green Bay and other places. But they believe the guy can block, so that's why you move him to guard, where he's got less pass blocking difficulty, or he can get some help. And how serious do you think they are about Benenach? And is this an investiture situation where, hey, we might be spending all this money on the line, we got to have a no-cash player in there?
Well, I think at this point, my investiture theory dwindles a little bit, because jobs are on the line. You got to win. You got to freaking win. Yeah. And if you think Sweezy's not 100%, you're not happy with Sweezy's film from 2017, you think Benenach can give you more, you got to play Benenach. You know, forget the investiture at that point. These are desperate times for desperate people. Yeah. And you know what? Benenach played fairly well. Lee,
yeah.
He played fairly well. He didn't embarrass himself. Lee filling in for Dotson.
There were a couple games he had some nasty whiffs on pass blocking, but once he got his sea legs under him, last couple games he did okay.
You know, and I think they're making a concerted effort, I think, to bulk up their run blocking, which we've all commented was atrocious for most of last season.
I won't atrocious. I won't.
But you would argue that Peyton Barber took the same blocking and
Exhibit A
and made a lot more out of it.
For two years, Ira.
I go back to seeing Doug Martin hitting the backfield way too often. Too many 3-yard runs, too many 1-yard runs, too many minus 1-yard runs. I don't like the pass blocking up to this point. We'll see what Warhop can do. We will. A lot of pressure on George Warhop also.
By the way, since you mentioned Warhop, I don't think we ever mentioned this on this podcast. When Joe Thomas retired, future Hall of Fame tackle for the Browns, he cited Warhop as instrumental in him turning into a quality NFL offensive lineman, because Warhop was his coach.
You know, I got to say, at the end of the 2015 season, I said to you guys, maybe on a podcast, you know, nobody's made a bigger comeback in Tampa than George Warhop, because we were killing him in 2014. You know, we were killing him. And in 2015, franchise records, you know, Doug running wild, you know, Sims, your man Sims, who, by the way, still hasn't been picked up.
Shocking.
Has Sims been picked up?
No, he's
unemployed, Ira.
I'm beyond words. Beyond words. I still think he can be a useful third back somewhere.
Well, here's a good. I'm glad you brought up Charles Sims.
You're going to segue from Charles Sims?
Well, not because I want to hear Lee chuckle, but in all seriousness, Ira, think about it. take yourself back to 2017. Charles Sims was an integral part of this offense. Third down back. Cutter's using him all over the place. He's relying on him in the passing game. And he's playing on special teams. He's the only guy that Dirk Cutter said had a, quote, outstanding training camp. And now he's gone and unemployed. Does that speak to their inability to evaluate running backs? Does it speak to Sims just not getting the job done? Maybe Cutter wanting to change some elements of the offense? What does your wisdom say?
I was in love with Charles Sims after 2015. I thought he was fantastic.
He's easy.
Easy. Not in the Rachel Watson type of way, there. No, or Kay Adams. I understand that.
That's sacrilege.
I didn't lust for Charles Sims. I understand that.
That's sacrilege.
But he was fabulous that year. Oh. He was fabulous. 1,000 yards from scrimmage behind an all-pro back. That does not happen. Cutter used him exceptionally well. Screens, bubble, and other assorted screens. Draw plays. Everything Cutter did with Sims seemed to work that year. And then,
except for
2 years, you know, I gotta yield to lead the Kemper. Charles Sims couldn't run the football.
No, the last
2 years.
I thought all he needed to know was Chris Myers, Fox Sports broadcaster, play-by-play guy, who is the Bucks' preseason play-by-play man on Channel 8, did not refer to him as a running back, referred to him as a receiving back. When a guy employed by the team refers to him as a one-trick pony, that's all you need to know.
You know what? And I don't even like saying this on a podcast, but you have to at least think about it. Maybe there's more to the story.
There could be.
Maybe there's more to the story with Charles Sims. Let's hope not.
Get out of here with that, Cal.
Why hasn't he been picked up?
You know,
he can't be a third back for a team.
You bring up something interesting. This isn't specific to Charles Sims. May not be remotely connected to Charles Sims. But that subject. When I say all three of us, or anybody covering the Bucks, or anybody covering an NFL team, you could only write what you know. Now, I'll give you an example. I had a person from the Bucks text me out of the blue a couple Sundays ago. I have an idea who he was talking about, but I wasn't sure. And the text was basically, don't you know sometimes we get rid of people because they're ruinous in their locker room? And I replied to this person. I was like, look, I can't just label everybody you cut as a cancer. That's pretty damn irresponsible, giving someone a scarlet letter like that. I can only write what I know, and sometimes that means I have to dig through stats to look for a clue. Now, if you want to tip me off and say we got rid of so-and-so because he was a cancer, different story. I keep it off the record, but I just can't assume that. That's grossly irresponsible.
Steve, when it comes to off-field issues, even the potential off-field issues, you don't speculate.
No,
you don't
speculate. That's dangerous.
You absolutely.
You just did, Ira.
No, I said maybe. I said, and I didn't specify what the issue could be.
Yeah, right.
I said maybe there's more to the story.
Yeah, it could be he didn't go get his driver's license.
More to the story. And I'll give you an example. And Lee will know exactly what I'm talking about. We had a pretty damn good idea that Seferian Jenkins had some issues.
Yeah.
He had some problems. We never delved into it. We never specified. Until he did.
Mm-hmm.
Until he did. And once he does, all bets are off. And that's the way it should be. That's exactly the way. And Josh Freeman's another perfect example. We don't know the specifics of what's going on with Josh Freeman. But he can't get a job in the National Football League. He's never been hurt. And he's still young. And he can't get a job.
Steve, you want to pipe in what you heard? Having cocktails with people? I thought it was very interesting.
About who? Freeman?
Yeah, about why he is unemployed.
Yeah,
speculative, of course.
Know, somebody in the NFL told me, hey, once you get that label, real or not, that you're doing
real
drugs,
or not,
that
real
you're
or
using drugs, you're not going to get a job, and the likelihood that you get a job decreases greatly at the quarterback position because of the level of importance to it. Now, whether that's 100% true or not, I don't know, but of course, a lot of that's based on talent, right? If the guys with talent that have problems, but look at Doug Martin. So he's getting every chance in the book, and we know he's got a drug
but
problem.
But he's not standing on the center.
It's interesting.
Lee, whether that's fair or not, it's the reality.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But let me go back to Charles Sims. The reason I think it's very flimsy shot, I'm not discounting what you said, but a flimsy shot that this guy was in trouble or had an issue off the field. First of all, he's there every OTA, doesn't give a peep, does whatever they tell him to do, doesn't complain. Again, he's the only guy they said was outstanding in training camp. I know the regime loved his all-around game. He was a pet of Dirk Cutter.
Cutter talked him up all the time, Lee.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And last year, he led the Bucks. You know, small sample size, granted, but he led the Bucks in yards per carry of the guys who actually got the rock to run the ball. So I think, though, Ira, I really think it speaks to their level of evaluation of running backs. Because unless there's that 2% chance that Sims did something off the field, think about it. Their top two backs going into last year. Now it's Doug Martin and Sims.
And they're keeping Quiz Rogers. Quiz is back.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be the Charles Sims, you know, third down back, you would think, at this point. We'll see.
Yeah, I asked Cutter about that, about Sims and about that third down role. You know, hey, I said to him this morning, look, Sims obviously had a big role and now he's gone. Do you see Rogers stepping in, or is that something you'd target for a rookie, or how do you see filling that? And he went right to Rogers. Hey, he did that for us in Atlanta, blah, blah, blah.
Now, they could draft a kid that ends up being a three down back. It happens in this league, and it happened last year with a couple of rookie running backs that made an instant impact.
Well,
and they weren't first round running backs.
To get back to Steve's point about evaluating running backs, and I had heard this is a true story. I trust the guy who told me this. And maybe 6 months after I first heard, I went back to this guy again. And he told me, oh, no, you're right. Some Buck scout in a meeting preparing for the draft, Lovey was in there, and he mentioned how he thought Charles Sims reminded him of Matt Forte. Lovey immediately fell in love. Heard Matt Forte, ears perked up, and
Very good player for the Bears for a long time.
Yeah, and he's... Charles Sims is not Matt Forte.
No, he's not.
But Lovey, being Lovey, he heard that, and it was all but a done deal at that point that Charles Sims was going to be a Bucks running back.
I thought it was interesting, Lee. I'm not sure you were there when I asked Light, hey, what kind of reaction have you gotten here in Orlando from fellow personnel guys, even coaches, GMs? He indicated that it feels a little bit different this year, that guys went out of their way. I don't know if they're trying to butter up the Bucks and raise their expectations just to smash them. But Light seemed to think, Steve, that this time it was a little more genuine and a little more effusive in their praise for the Buck offseason moves. You buying that?
It felt that way. I was there when you asked him. He also closed by saying, well, we all sort of sit around and stroke each other, so who knows.
Yeah.
But in reality, I could see other personnel men saying, hey, Jason, you needed defensive ends. You walked away with
four guys.
JPP, Vinny Curry, and Unrein.
Yeah.
Hey, that's not bad, man. Which it's not. You know, frankly, it's not.
And so, Jensen on the other side. Jensen, yeah. And a kicker.
Right.
Don't forget the kicker, Lee. Don't forget it.
Exactly. All right, Sage, look, we've got a lot to hit on as the weeks unfold here. Plenty of chatter from Team Glazer, the next podcast. More things coming out of these owners' meetings. And just your general, the things that you do, Ira, we can't even get into this podcast with your hounding. Tom Coughlin.
He's posted a picture of me and Coughlin.
I saw that.
You know, I'm just going to say this. Tom Coughlin has a reputation, doesn't like the media. Doesn't like him, doesn't talk to him, doesn't trust him.
I'm over there carrying my beet salad. I'm in a hurry to get back and start chomping down over there.
Ira's got a beet salad in hand, right? Of course, we're at the Ritz-Carlton, and, you know, the snack bar sells beet salad.
$16. $16.
Oh, yeah. Because that's what it is here at the Ritz.
How about a little compensation there, gentlemen? That's a discussion for another time.
Iris carrying his beet salad. Tom Coughlin walks by with his wife, and he extends a hand to Ira. Hey, how are you, Ira? Good to see you.
I said, hell of a year for you guys.
Here, yeah. I was telling Lee this, Ira, so people understand. Coughlin reaches out to shake your hand, which is a big step on its own for him. And you grab his hand, shake it, and you don't let go. It's a classic Brooklyn move.
I didn't even see that. I have no recollection.
You didn't let go. And he's looking at you like, is this guy going to let go? And then, you know what? You cornered him, and you guys had a passionate chat there. And his wife was waiting like, hey, Tom, you don't talk to anybody. What's with this little guy?
And I did congratulate him.
Did she say that?
No, I don't know.
You know, today I had a tremendous conversation. Lasted about 15 minutes with Doug Marrone. Now, my by the time this podcast comes on, my column will already be out. I think it's going to be on Marrone on Wednesday. Talking about all things Buck-tinged from he thinks the Bucks made some great moves. He talked about Seferian Jenkins. He talked about Calais Campbell, the intangibles. A lot of Buck-centric stuff from Doug Marrone, who couldn't stop talking. And by the way, early in the conversation, I said, hey, I'm from Tampa. That's why I'm asking you about ASJ, and, you know, I'm going to ask you about Calais Campbell. He goes, Tampa, I know that town like the back of my hand. And he goes, what's your name? He looks at my thing. He goes, Ira, Green Iguana, West Shore or Ybor City? Ybor. And so I said, Ybor City. He goes, wrong answer. The one in West Shore is better.
Nah.
And you know, he starts drilling me on my own town. He goes, what have you been there? 6 months or so? You just got there from New York? I said, 30 years. 30 years, and you got the Green Iguana in Ybor City? Come on, you don't know what you're talking about, Ira.
Iguana, Green Iguana at West Shore is a great place to drink. The clientele is significantly better at Ybor City. Depends what you're looking for.
Thank you.
All right, Ira, look, all I know is that Doug Marrone's probably the only guy in the NFL from the Bronx, and that's why he likes you. Come on, it's a connection.
He also said he implied that the NFC South, even though he's in the AFC, that's the best division in football, guys. It's the best division in football.
And I was thinking about this the other night. And Steve and I always talk about this, how, you know, Jameis is number four quarterback in the division. But that's no shame because two of those three may be in the Hall of Fame. And the third one's not shabby either. It's been in the Super Bowl. But I started thinking about other divisions. And off the top of my head, I can't think of a division right now where Jameis would be a number three quarterback. I mean, that low. A couple of divisions, he'd be a number two. Including Minnesota or NFC North. Yeah, right. So I got to thinking about that. Like, you know, again, Steve and I, and we're not wrong when we say he's number four quarterback in the division, but there's a lot of divisions he'd be number two quarterback. So that just shows the strength of that division.
All right, Ira, flash answer. We're going out on this. Better Hall of Fame candidate right now, which goes to Lee's question. Matt Ryan or Cam Newton?
Both league MVPs. Both league MVPs. Matt Ryan or Cam Newton?
Who's got a better shot in your opinion right now?
I think Newton, because I think he's got more years left, and he's still writing a story. And when he's at the top of his game, there's nobody like him. And I'm out. Mic drop.